I'm Xiang Li. I'm a final year graduate student from Caltech. Great thanks to Juan for inviting me to present our recent work about angular emission patterns of random black holes. This work is in collaboration with co-authors from Caltech at ANU, and the paper was published on PRD recently. Here is a brief outline of the talk. I will first motivate our study with some background, introduce our template model and the fitting method, and then present the results. The gravitational radiation from binary black hole ring down stage is described by the Tarkovsky equation. The solution quasi-normal modes predicts both the temporal and spatial dependency of the waveform. QMs are labeled by three integers, L, M, N, with L, M being the angular indexes and N representing the overtones. For the temporal dependency, some QM frequency are plotted here. The real and imaginary axis are represented at a unit of remnant mass. The hollow circles here are the non-spinning values, and different branches are separated with increasing spin magnitude for the same L and N, but different Ms. The branches with positive Ms, like the second digits, are called prograde mode, and their real frequency will increase with spin magnitude. The ones with negative Ms are called retrograde modes. Their frequency decrease with the spin magnitude. As the modes with different overtones, they can be distinguished via the decay rates. So the first, the upper lines here are the fundamental overtones, and the second line here are the first non-fundamental overtone. I didn't plot further, but you can imagine they have smaller and larger decay rates. There are many works about remnant black hole spectrum, especially like the test of Nahir theorem. Recently, it is shown that including overtones can lead to better fits and estimated parameters by making use of the earlier time after the merger. What is limited is only considers one time series, which means it doesn't consider the spatial part of the Tarkovsky solution. In the spatial part, on the one hand, the angular distribution of quasi-normal modes are described by the spin-weighted spheroidal harmonics. And on the other hand, in the waveform database and most template banks, the orthonormal basis of spin-weighted spherical harmonics are often used. The mode mixing between the two set of bases may cause subtle differences and can lead to another test of generativity. The mixing happens between S and Y with the same M indexes but different L indexes. The strength of mixing is characterized by the spheroidality, which is further determined by the final mass, final spin, and the QM frequency. This page contains a showcase of the difference between S and Y, the spheroidal and spherical harmonics. For example, spheroidality 0.3. I plotted the spatial profile for three example QMs, the 2-2, 3-2, and 3-3, in both 1D and 2D forms. So in this 1D plot at the top, the amplitude, the absolute value of amplitude was plotted with the inclination angle. The spheroidal harmonics are shown in the solid lines, and the spin-weighted spherical harmonics are in the dashed line. So for simplicity, I will call them S and Y in the following context. On the bottom, there are the 3D plots with the same color code. So it can be seen that the S model will tends to emit more towards the pole directions and less towards the edge directions. So there, like this difference, what needs to be considered. Practically, the ring down stage is not very informative in a full IMR waveform. It is short and often at higher frequency, and thus the signal-to-noise ratio is limited. Luckily, in the third observation run, more events with detectable higher order modes become available. This includes the first one with like the first and second one are with high mass ratio, and sorry, the first and third one, and the second one with it's a lack of the in spiral stages with the only ring down left, and it's like many discussion have been made on this event. Also, in the proposed next generation detectors, including Einstein telescope, Cosmic Explorer, and NEMO, sensitivity at high frequency ranges will be greatly improved. This will open more possibility in the BBH post-merger studies. Thus, it is worthwhile and timely to study the ring down emission in both the temporal and spatial sense. I will then introduce our temporal spatial model and the fitting method. The QM decomposition, as initially proposed by Tarkovsky, is most easily performed by taking the z-axis along the remnant spin direction. We call it the final spin frame with coordinate labeled with tilde. In this frame, two models with S and Y harmonics are, two models with the two harmonics are modeled. So in this two model, there are multiple components. So the omega LMNs are the complex QM frequency, and these harmonics are described the spatial profile, and there is coefficient B plus minus, which describes the emission towards the north or south direction. Like we label them with S and Y for the convenience of the describing the algorithm. These two coefficients will be fitted independently in the in our algorithm, and they are governed by the progenitors. So it's not predetermined. It's not determined by the solution, but determined by the source. On the other hand, however, a more convenient frame for describing the long-lasting in spiral stage has its z-axis along the orbital angular momentum, which we call orbital frame. When the final spin is aligned with the orbital angular momentum, the two frames just coincide. But when anti-aligned, the frame needs to be connected by the transformation shown here. So this is the most simple scenario. But for more generalized, for more general misaligned cases, some tensor rotations needed depending on the direction of the spin. So it's not in the scope of this study, but on the future proposed works. The spatial coherence constructed here is very important in our fitting. Before going on to introduce our fitting algorithm, let's have a closer look at the conventions of QM expansion. For the same LMN indexes, depending on the convention used in the literature, there are four possible components. They form a 2x2 summation set. One aspect corresponds to the emission direction, like to the north or to the south, roughly, depending on which harmonics it belongs to. And the other corresponds to the pro versus retrograde modes, which have different polarization patterns. So in the previous literature, they have decided the definition of pro and retro by how in the phase direction, like how is the time involving direction with respect to the spin direction. But we take a slightly different aspect here by making it in a more explicit expression. Some previous work sum over the emission direction first. Under this, this summation symbol, there are two explicit terms with the same M indexes represent the pro and retrograde modes towards the same direction. Alternatively, if we switch the M and minus M for the second term, we can regroup the summation and obtain the second formula. In this case, the two explicit terms are both retro or prograde modes depending on the sign of M. So like this will be like sum over the excitation first, and then inside it is the direction. For our purpose, we believe this is more convenient because the modes in the same group tends to be both excited or not excited, like both dominant or subdominant. That is a better description. So for example, the entire retrograde groups can be ignored in fitting the non-spinning binaries without having too much influence. We will touch that later. In our paper, taking this L equals to 2, M equals to plus minus 2, and the fundamental overtone, for example, we listed a large table to compare the convention in the existing literature. We hope this effort could help clarify the confusion in terminology in different contexts, especially the use of mirror mode, like in different literature, like the mirror mode is used to represent different things. So it's not about mirror mode or non-mirror mode, but which mode is the mirror mode of which mode is the most important thing. Following the convention, let's further talk about the physical picture. During the binary merger, the mode excitation and spatial polarization pattern of the in spiral stage would be inherited by the ring down waveform. For the remnant, the direction of spin and whether the prograde or retrograde mode get excited are determined by the binary dynamics, like the source term, and they are related to each other. In the in spiral stage, the orbital motion of the binary appears counterclockwise when viewed from the north and clockwise when viewed from the source, according to the right-handed rule. This is the start point. When the progenitor binary is nine spinning, the remnant spin is contributed solely from the orbital angular momentum and thus will be aligned with it. For the spin aligned cases, so the remnant spins will have overlay contribution from the initial spins and also enough with spin aligned remnants. But when the initial spin is anti-aligned with the orbital angular momentum, there will be a computation between and the spin and angular momentum, and the leftover component, the stronger one, will determine the direction of the remnant spin. If the positive contribution is larger, which means the orbital angular momentum is larger, not in a direct sense, but after the near zone whole evolution process, this will also lead to a aligned remnant spin. But when it is very anti-aligned, then the system will lead with a spin anti-aligned system. Sorry. So let's check with the polarization pattern when viewed from the north and south pole direction of the two cases. So for the spin anti-aligned case, the frame transformation mentioned above needs to be taken into account. Considering the in spiral stage polarization and the smooth or roughly smooth angular pattern transition, we will anticipate the prograde mode to be more strongly excited in the spin aligned case and retrograde mode to be more excited in the final spin anti-aligned cases. Additionally, the magnitude of excitation can be traced qualitatively to the corresponding LM modes at the end of the in spiral stage, like the post-Newtonian expansion and then the initial value of that mode. Although the merger stage is highly nonlinear and can only be solved numerically, but this will be this, but this is a physical process needs to be continuous. Okay, so let's then introduce our spatial temporal fitting strategy. We use the S-axis waveform as a target H, like we call it data waveform. They are memory free and corresponds to our linear perturbation model. A more correct treatment will be using the Cauchy characteristic extraction and transfer it to the BMS frame, but the precision level is okay for our purpose. We have proved it by validation and we have the plan to upgrade the source using the BMS, but it has it's in progress. And then we have the template waveform G constructed from the model of S and Y described in the previous slides. We then define a global inner product from our starting time T naught and and the distance between the target and the data waveform in a two-dimensional sense. The parameters of our fitting can be divided into three categories. The starting time T0 would be the hyperparameter to control which portion of the data waveform is taken into account. And then the intrinsic parameters are final mass and spin, and the excitation coefficients are Bs. They will be fitted using different strategy. The global distance is minimized in as follows. So given the data we form truncated from zero, we for each set of the final mass and spin, we obtain the QM9 frequency using the QM package, and then we determine the best fitted coefficient through linear regression numerically, and then we search over the 2D grids, the parameter space for final mass and spin to find the point with the optimal distance. And the SY model will then be compared by this the minimum the optimal distance. In the implementation, we choose one benchmark binary, nine spinning binaries, and three spinning binaries. It is obvious that we cannot incorporate all LM modes, so we should decide which modes to add it, such that we can gain most of the most physical insight. So we define a relative importance, which is the integration over 100M after the T peak. So there is also a group using the emitted energy, but I think it is okay for a different purpose. The initial magnitude of the modes are determined by the roughly by the post-Newtonian order, and the sum suppression due to symmetry, like some modes is not. It's not important in the equal mass cases. Oh, sorry. So the mass ratio is listed here. So for the benchmark binary G0, it's in blue, and for other binaries N1 to A9, they are with increasing mass ratios. And we start with Q equals to 6. Like this is the largest available one in the SXX catalog with the with the precision level we want. We rank the different LM modes, the LM modes like in the data in the waveform database, they are separated using the spin-weighted spherical harmonics, and we label them roughly in groups, and we add LM modes in groups depending on how strong the relative importance are. And then there are three spin anti-aligned cases. We also add a non-spinning A0 for comparison. So because adding ratio grid modes will double the number of bases, we only consider LM modes up to the group three. Following that, I will show some direct results and summarizing plots. Let me first produce the results of the benchmark binary G0. It has a similar parameter as the first observation GW150914 with small effective spin and aligned remnant spin. It has the best, we choose it as a benchmark because it has the best numerical precision in the SXX catalog. And we would like to use it to verify and showcase our algorithm. So here we plot the global distance, the relative estimation errors for remnant mass and spin with respect to the T offset. The T offset is the difference between the T peak. T peak is the maximum of the L2 norm. And then the difference between this one and the starting time we choose. It is shown that the distance would decrease until reaching a roughly stable value. We call this specific time of transition, like when it is decreasing and then being flat, we call this time the transition time, and then the stable value as the minimum distance. So comparing between these two rows, the effect of adding LM modes is shown to reduce the minimum distance. And some related improvement is on the final mass and spin, like the level, like for the S model, in this case, it's like roughly, it's no better than 10 to the minus 3, but in this, when adding more LM modes, they can reach 10 to the minus 4 level. On the other aspects, if we add more overtones, then it is shown that the transition time is becoming earlier and earlier. So this transition time is taken into the S model, because like we can see that the S model is always better than the Y model. So we take it to be the more faithful representation. So this transition happens when the overtones not included in the model have decayed away. And the minimum distance is determined by how precise the template can be. So that is mostly determined by the LM modes, because the higher order overtone added will be decayed away in before it reaches the stable stage. To show trend of the mass ratio, we construct two summarizing plots for non-spinning binaries.
Chen, do you mind if I ask a question?
Of course, yeah.
So it's going a little bit fast, so I think I got lost in the method section. So can you say again how you're using the spatial information, and you know how it actually, you know, what it does for you? Because I mean, I'm trying to compare it, you know, if you're using time information, you're basically using the phase of the wave, and that is, you know, more accurate than using amplitude information, which would come from the spatial aspects of the waveform. So can you comment on the merit of using, so first of all, how do you use the spatial information, and how much does it actually gain, how much it gets you?
Okay. Yeah, thanks for asking, and sorry for being fast. The spatial temporal fitting here is mostly on how we determine it is a good fit. So like the target and template waveform we constructed here, it has both the spatial dependence and the temporal dependence. So which means it has the contribution from not only the frequencies, but also the spatial coherence. So in this sense, in the spatial part, it's not only about the amplitudes, but also different modes needs to be, this summation on here is a complex summation. So the phase needs to match, such that it can have a small distance. So the distance we define here is a 2D distance. So the inner product between the two modes, the two waveforms are taken by this the 2D integral, like both the time and spatial. So spatial is like, spatial itself is a 2D integral, like it's the on the surface of the sphere. So if you take only the consider if you have only the temporal information, then the only important thing is the complex frequency. And then in some direction, so if we go back here, for a temporal only fitting, you may take in the implementation, people may take the H22 the H22 waveform, which is basically the emission of one of the for one of the spatial bases. So, but the data they have is actually one time series, like it is associated with a specific direction or associated with a spatial spatial mode. But it's only one time series. But in our consideration, we have a matrix of time series. So this matrix is the discretized sampling of all the directions. So if you consider one time series as one line, then we will have a whole line which takes like the number of data is like have a different dimension. And then if we determine if a model matches the data good, it means it's not only about the frequency, but also on the spatial coherence. Like the coherence means the phase and
right. But I mean, when I see those angular profiles, I mean, the difference between the two models seems very, very small. So I'm surprised that in the end, it really gives you something significantly different.
Yes. That is the main idea. So even though it looks like this one are different but very small, but the distance is mainly determined by the mismatch. So this is small in terms of the whole amplitude, but if you only look at this difference between them, adding or not adding this mode mixing will have a huge effect. So this example here is where this velocity 0.3 is very, very large actually. So even the benchmark binary, like when the final spin is 0.7, it is not having so large velocity. But remember this small difference, and the actual difference is even smaller if you compare it with the result here. Like if the model use the basis, this can as good roughly 10 to the minus 2, or and if you use the Y model, the difference can be 10 to the minus 4. Like this is 2 order of magnitude, roughly 1 or 2 order of magnitude improvement. This improvement is even larger. So it's larger when you include more LM modes, but it's not so important if you include only the 2-2 mode. That is because
that's why I'm surprised, because it seems that, you know, so I guess I have a hard time understanding where this massive improvement is coming from. So another question. So I'm trying to imagine, so I can see that you can do this in terms of, you know, numerically generated waveforms, because you do have information about all angles. But if you were to imagine doing this for an actual gravitational wave search, you would have maybe 5 or 6 detectors scattered around the Earth. And instead of having data points on all the sphere, you would have just, you know, 5 or 6, or I don't know how many detectors you want to involved in this, but you would have a much smaller number. So can you really use that spatial information in that context where you have so few, so few points on the sphere?
Yeah, that is a great question. So that is what we plan, and also I heard from Professor Will Farr in the CCA, they are also interested to using the physical insight from this kind of study to construct some kind of data strategy for the actual test of using real data. So it's not solved, but it's an interesting, it's the most important thing we want to discover using this kind of study. So if they are not so different, even in the proof of principle study, then we will not motivated to construct that outcome data strategy. But it's
good point. Okay, thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
Yeah, no. Yes, thanks for asking.
Can I also ask a question here? So I'm a little bit confused why you want to use this spatial fitting as well, right? So if we detect a ring down signal, right? So we are just living in one direction in the source frame. You cannot just sample all the waves in the waves in all directions in the source frame. So you basically don't, you only have the temporal information in a single ring down waveform. Are you talking about many?
Yes. So this is actually last slides. And yeah, so given that there are people asking, so this is just a rough idea. It's not any practical stuff. For one waveform, they will emit towards multiple directions. And it's true that we can get only one direction information. So even though we can have multiple detectors, but in terms of that such long distance, everything is in one direction. So yeah, but the hope and thus like the possibility is that we can, it's we are motivated to try to combine different events with the same intrinsic parameters. But what is said to be intrinsic parameters? There is everything is under some have some uncertainty. But the hope is we can combine the different stuff, and then they all emit to the Earth, and we combine the inclination information and some property, and then we try to jointly see them, to jointly analyze them, and try to see if the relation between the inclination angle and some excitations can reveal some information of the model. So yeah, that is the hope. It's not anything solid now.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Where left? Oh, left here. Okay. Here, let me go back to this trend. Okay. To show the trend with mass ratios, we can construct it. We constructed two summarizing plots for the non-spinning binaries. The example results of G naught and N9 with mass ratio 6 are plotted, shown here with the reference line, just for reference. So the first summary is on the minimal distance, which is a stable value at the end. The trend is, like the plot here is within each single block, the different color bars are the different mass ratio. So the first is the benchmark one, and the line is with mass ratio 1 towards mass ratio 6. It can be seen that also the different groups depending on how many LM modes you added. So as I explained earlier, I add them in group. And then this first column is the only one fundamental overtone, and the second one is the with the first non-fundamental overtones. So I add, when I said I add the overtone, I add overtone for all of the LM modes. So the trend is for larger Q, like this end, comparing between this these parts, for larger Q, adding LM modes will significantly improve the distance. Like if you see this two thing, like this adding of the modes will make it from the 10% until 10 to the minus 3. So like this improvement is huge compared with the small. So that is corresponds to the, that is because in this scenario, the higher order LMOs are excited more because of the unsymmetry mass ratio. And then for smaller Q, the difference between S and Y, like the color dots and the black dots are larger and are enlarged when you're adding LMOs. And this difference is more, like this difference between S and Y is more significant than the higher mass ratio cases. That is because the difference between S and Y are caused by the mode mixing, and mode mixing depends on the spin. So if the mass ratio is small, then the spin is larger, and then the more mode you added, you are enlarged this distinguishability. So like these two things are very different. The second summarized plot is on the transition time. So as I explained, the transition time is a time when it translates from the from a decreasing amplitude, a decreasing distance with respect to T offset and to a stable value. So if you don't like this abstract description, you can see these lines I draw here for reference. So it can be seen that this red line, when you add more LM groups, like this transition happens later compared with the previous cases. And these dots are summarized using these dots here. So yes. As I mentioned earlier, the transition happens when the unmodeled overtones decays away. So if you add more odd tones, that means the unordered odd tone is an even higher one. It will decay faster and making the transition time earlier. And in the second aspect, adding more error modes will postpone it. That is because the model can be precise, and then it needs more time to converge to be this precise level, which means it needs more time for the overtones to decay away. So the message taken from here is that if you want to add more LM modes, then it's better to add more overtones jointly, such that the model can play its strongest functionality. It is interesting to see that the linear QM model can be a good fit up to the peak. If you add, so this is just two overtones. So if I add more overtones, I didn't plot here, but you can see from the transition time that it is good. It reaches its most possible precision at a very early time after up to the peak. So there are many discussion recently about the linear or nonlinear of this Ringdown waveform. And I'm not an expert on the most fundamental theory part, but my take off from all the discussion is that there are two kinds of possible source of nonlinearity. If we think the overtone is a kind of nonlinearity, they mostly play effort in the earlier time. And the traditional nonlinearity like the memory and also the ongoing research of the quadratic 2-2 terms, the 2-2, like when the waveform interact itself, the strongest one is the 2-2 and the quadratic induction from 2-2 will contribute to the 4-4 waveform. They will mainly play the role on the later time. So like this is an interesting observation here, I think needs, it's worth future exploring. Okay, here is a brief summary of the results from the non-spinning binaries. The SVM model distinguishability, as I explained later, earlier, they are influenced jointly by the high order LMOs and overtones because like each mode carries a spherodity. And for the part I have already explained in the previous slides. Okay, the next representative results are for the spin anti-aligned binaries. I take the A1 to A3, both with high mass ratio, and I label the A1 to A3 for the magnitude of the anti-aligned spin. Now we only consider the S model because we already explored S and Y distinguishability earlier. And we compare the model. We compare the fitting with or without the retrograde modes, as shown by the color code in here. So the difference between the difference of including retrograde modes will become more and more significant if you see from the left to the right. So for the spin aligned case, it is like slightly improvement. So that is actually an interesting point because as in our anticipation, the retrograde mode in this case is not important, but it can also improve a bit. And for A1 to A3, that is because the spin magnitude has become stronger. And the effect is also revealed on the optimal coefficient. So for the optimal coefficient as it is appears for the first time, I only plot the spin, the amplitude. I do not plot the phase. It is interesting to see about the phase after some discussion of the maybe the overtone cancellation in phase stuff. But for our purpose, we only plot the amplitude and for the emission towards the two different directions because we do not have precessing, so they are mainly the same and conjugate to each other. So only plot the amplitude. So it can be seen that for the spin aligned case, the retrograde modes is like subdominant one, And for the spin anti-align cases, the dominant one is the retrograde mode. So this line is fitted with pro and retro, and this line is fitted with pro only. I will first analyze the physical picture and go back to this plot later. So we first analyze in terms of the spatial feature. So this is the spatial, the polarization taken from the data waveform. Because like in the S-axis, the Z-axis is taken to be the orbital angular momentum direction. So as in the physical picture we described earlier, so we should anticipate this, all the four waveform have a similar feature. So like how they inspire, how they damp, like they are similar. Like not clock, so in terms of clockwise or counterclockwise, they are similar. And comparing with the mode polarization pattern for the spin aligned case, we would anticipate, so if the final spin is taken to be aligned, then it's the prograde mode that dominant. And if the spin, like the fitted spin is anti-aligned, we would expect the retrograde mode to be dominant. But in terms of the temporal feature, we can see that with the same indexes, the retrograde mode have a smaller decay rate, but a lower frequency. So I plotted here some example values. So it can be seen because the different branches are extended according to the spin magnitude. So if the spin magnitude is larger, then the difference between pro and retro frequencies are become more distinguishable. So people will say it's prograde or retrograde mode, but in the data, in the numerics, they do not know the physical picture. They only know the frequency and the phase matches in the fitting. So imagine if the final spin is very small, so taking it to be the prograde or retrograde doesn't matter too much because they have similar spatial profile and similar frequencies. So in terms of fitting, it's not distinguishable. So let's go back to this this optimal coefficient plot. We have explained for the prograde, for the spin aligned case, like it is the prograde mode always dominant. But for the spin anti-aligned case, there will be some random switching here, which is associated with the spin flip of the final spin estimation. And this spin is not unphysical. It's just says that it needs to maintain the spatial coherence, like the question by Eric at the earlier stage. So these two effects are associated. And then for the earlier stage, it also shows seemingly dominance of prograde mode. That is because the lack of overtones at this stage, and it cannot capture the frequency very well. So it looks like this prograde dominance. And this transition, this kind of switching point will become earlier for the spin, when the remnant spin is larger, like that is because in the spatial, in a spectrum, like they are more distinguishable. And finally, when the final spin is large enough, like this pro and retro distinction is large enough, then there will be no such kind of confusing switch. So, so let's summarize and outlook our study. In this work, we provide a verification of theory and a possible future test of GR. We also reinforce some conclusion from the black hole spectroscopy with the spatial feature added and show the correlation between the spectrum spectroscopy and the spatial excitations. For the outlook, we plan to generalize the idea to spin misaligned cases with possible inclusion of mass and current quadruples. And we would like to extend the study of the retrograde mode and overtones larger than five. So there is a lot of discussion of the higher order overtone, like if whether they are physical and why there is a transition, and if the transition is visible in the numerical, like in the numerical fitting. And then it's the data strategy I mentioned following the question from Juan. Before ending the talk, let me endeavor two thoughts, the thoughts of the two. So like the second one has already been endeavored, delivered. So this result is a slice like motivated by the A0 fitting earlier, like the inclusion of retrograde mode for A0 will also play a role. So I do this for the G0, which is a benchmark binary. So yeah, because this is the most precise one. So for in this result, I fitted with this six LMO. So this actually six plus five, because this five have the retrograde retrograde modes. So these two color code are the fitting with prograde or pro plus retrograde mode. And from left to right are with different overtones. And these three lines are the distance, the estimated error for the mass and spin. It is interesting to see there is no such difference between retro and prograde mode if there's only the fundamental overtone. And if it goes from left to right, when you include more overtones, the difference between pro and retro are revealed. This is not overfitting by definition, because overfitting means the distance is good, but the estimated parameter is bad. But this is not the case. So the estimated parameter is also slightly better or no worse than the case. So it means this the retrograde mode is a reliable fitting component. So from this fitting, we have four overtones and six or 11 LMOs. We further have a look at the excitation coefficient for different overtones. So this is not for this one, but all of this later, all of the final lines are for this fitting result. And we plot the estimated coefficient for different overtones. So it can be seen that for the fundamental one, the retrograde mode is like definitely subdominant. And it's slightly increasing at a high, it's slightly decays faster. But if you look at the higher order overtones, the pro and retrograde modes will be closer and closer in the importance and even shown in the similar order of magnitude. It is true that the result is not reliable at the before peak, but it's okay after the peak. So if we only see the distance in this and after the stable value, like about 2m, it also have the similar, like the observation remains, like in the mass, in the overtone three, they have the similar order of magnitude. So the question to ask is, why do the retrograde mode also plays a role in fitting the spin anti-aligned binaries and are shown excitation even earlier than the prograde mode? How is this related to the layering crossing picture and numerically or quantitatively? That is something interesting we want to explore. And like this one I already explained. So yeah, that's it. Hope I have a good timing. And thanks for your attention. And I'll take any questions.
Hey, thank you, Sean, for a very nice talk. So any questions? Eric has a question.
Yes, so this is a question that we discussed in our group meetings before. So apologies for throwing that onto you. you have for every mode a large number of potential overtones. And that means you can match a large variety of signals just by throwing different overtones onto it. Isn't that the definition of overfitting?
That is a good question. So overfitting, so I think the definition of overfitting is fit the noise rather than the signal.
Errors or something. Yes.
Yeah. When more parameters are added. So in terms of the first of all, we do not have that kind of noise. So the only noise here is the numerical noise in the SXX waveform, but we do not add artificial noise in this.
Okay. I was thinking of if you were to match any waveforms that you see or anything that was detected, that might be much more noise. But yes, that's true. In that sense, you don't have overtones. But still, you can match a large number of overtones, and there is no physical signal that corresponds to that. So if you had infinite accuracy, you could take infinitely many overtones to match something, and presumably you could match an elephant-shaped signal if you just use enough overtones.
It's an interesting point. So I think it also depends on the sampling rate, even for the numerical data. And also the overtones after level 5 is under discussion whether they are there are studies. If you take the excitation for different overtones, like there will be a peak around 4 or 5, which means if you add high overtone over that, it will be not so important. We haven't implemented here in the global sense, but it's interesting to see. So I'm not sure if that answers your question or if there is any question. If I misunderstand the question.
No, thank you. I just wanted your opinion. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thanks for asking.
Will?
Yeah, thanks for the nice talk. So just kind of following up on that, so on this plot. So it's not a huge effect, but just looking as you go from left to right and add more overtones, it does look like there's some increase in the error that you get for fitting the final parameters. Is that like above the truncation error for the simulations? And would that suggest that maybe be some evidence that these overtones are not there if trying to add them actually gives you like a worse measure of the final black hole remnant?
I'm not sure if I got a question correctly, but I first want to comment of the arrow level. So I think in terms of the relative arrow, so there will be a lot of fluctuations, and that are multiple reasons. So it's probably because of the numerical errors in the data, the SXS data. But what the most important message from this errors is what is the maximum possible fluctuation of the later stage. So so for example, taking this into account, it can fluctuate, but it can be no worse than 10, maybe 2 times 10 to the minus 3. So this will be the error level, I would say, reliable error level for this fitting result. And this is good up to 2m roughly. So I would say, from this result, I would say like this model can precisely describe the data at this level for up to 2. And then if you go to this figure, for example, if 2 overtones are included, I would say like this will be like 10 to the minus 3 numerical errors up to 10. So like in that sense, adding overtones can, it brings earlier this reliable time. So are you asking whether this like simulate 10 to the minus 3 is better than this This is 2 times it.
Yeah, well, so it seems like it helps for the mass, but then now if I'm looking at the spin or something, say around 30 m, it seems like it actually goes up as you add overtones, right? Do you have any feeling for why that's happening?
Oh, you mean this one? We do not actually know. So like this stuff, as your point. So if you truncate from a later time, then it behaves worse. Okay, that's your question. So for that question, Leo Stan and Craig Cook and Chris Moore, I guess. So these four groups are doing a kind of a code comparison. So we are using different algorithm to do the fitting in both the algorithm itself and in the numerical implementation. We hope that by comparing between our codes, we hope to have a consistent and widely accepted viewpoint on how this thing behaves. So like they can have different fluctuation, can be very good and very bad. But what is the common, what if there is any common feature between the different implementations, then we will say it's more reliable, in terms of the model. Yeah, the short answer is that we do not know the fluctuation, but we hope it's not influencing the main result. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for asking. Not a satisfying answer, but I hope it shows some.
Any other questions? Well, if not, let's thank Xiang again.